This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio. And take control of your privacy with IPVanish. This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio. And take control of your privacy with IPVanish.
Before we talk about timelines, affidavits, insane lies, and a suitcase that should never have been a part of this story, we need to talk about the human that's at the center. Gannon Jacob Stouch. Gannon was born September 29, 2008 in Horry County, South Carolina, but by 2020 he was living with his dad, Al, and stepmother, the soon-to-be infamous Letitia, in a quiet Colorado Springs neighborhood. Gannon was described by his friends and family as sweet, sensitive, nervous, and deeply attached to the adults who loved him. Now, sensitive, not in the way that's fragile, just attuned. He was a kid that really noticed things and who felt things really deeply. A kid that if he were scared, he would seek comfort, not wandering off without caring what happened next to him. And nowhere in the official search timeline, at least not early on, did anyone suggest that Gannon had ran away, because there wasn't evidence that he did that. But that is where this story unfortunately begins, with a version of events told not by facts, but by the person who had the most to hide. On January 27th, 2020, around 6:55 p.m., law enforcement received a call from Letitia reporting that Gannon had gone missing, and she claimed that she had last seen him that afternoon between 3 and 4 p.m., saying that he was leaving to go to a friend's house. But she, of course, couldn't name the friend. She couldn't recall any street names where he might have gone or provide any reliable contact information. Now, that alone would make most people's bullshit detector flash red. But in the early stages of a missing child case, law enforcement is cautious, and they treat every report very seriously. So Gannon was entered as a runaway, which feels disturbingly dismissive when you say that out loud. But in bureaucratic law enforcement terms, that's where they started. And Letitia cooperated with search teams. She showed up for interviews, she tweeted, she posted on social media, and she gave a number of media interviews about how devoted she was to this boy and how devastated she was by his disappearance. Now, that performance would later be compared with some recorded police interviews, and that contrast matters more than you might expect. Within days, private searchers and neighbors started asking questions that didn't really add up. And one neighbor, Roderick Drayton, reviewed his own surveillance video and saw Letitia's pickup truck pull out of the driveway in the late morning of January 27 with Gannon in the passenger seat, and then it returns hours later with only her in it. And that video directly contradicted her earlier statements about the timeline and the circumstances. So that runaway story wasn't just shaky, it was demonstratively false. Gannon's father, Al, watched that footage and completely broke down. He realized that the person reporting her stepson missing had probably invented that entire narrative. This wasn't a child who vanished while he was playing with friends. This was a child that was last seen on camera in the company of one adult who reported him missing. And that right there is when the direction of the investigation changed. Before the accusations and the headlines and all this denial and incoherent blame shifting that we're going to get to, there was Gannon. He loved Pokemon, video games. He was really close with his father and his siblings. He was an ordinary child with extraordinary value. He did not walk away from that house, no matter what anyone says. When Letitia called 911 on the evening of January 27th, 2020, she didn't sound panicked in the way parents usually do when a child vanishes. She sounded rehearsed. I mean, concerned, yes, emotionally, yeah, but not confused, not frantic, and not grasping for details. Instead, she offered a story. It was tidy enough to be repeated, vague enough to avoid any specifics, and flexible enough to bend later. Gannon, she said, had gone out to play with friends. He was upset. He was emotional, possibly running away. And right there in the opening act, she laid the groundwork for everything that followed. Because when an adult labels a missing child as emotional or troubled, it subtly shifts responsibility away from the people who were supposed to be watching him. It buys time, it slows down the urgency, and it plants doubt. And it's also complete nonsense. So let's be clear here. Nothing about Gannon's personality supported the idea that he would run away. This was a kid who struggled with anxiety, and he sought reassurance whenever he was scared. So he didn't disappear impulsively. He didn't leave without any essentials, and he sure as hell didn't vanish into the Colorado winter without a jacket, any money, and no plan. But early on, the police had limited information, and in missing child cases, you start where the reporting party leads you. Now, that didn't last long because within days, neighbors started reviewing their own surveillance footage. And again, one of those neighbors, Roderick Drayton, had found something that blew a hole straight through Letitia's version of events. And that video showed Letitia's pickup leaving the house late in the morning on January 27th with Gannon clearly visible in the passenger seat. And then hours later, that truck returned and Letitia was alone. Gannon never got out. And that footage mattered more than any interview that was done, any press conference or social media post, because it established the last confirmed sighting of Gannon alive, and it placed him exactly where investigators feared that he would be, with Letitia. And that's why when Al, Gannon's father, was shown that surveillance footage, he completely broke down, because that reaction tells you everything that you need to know, that this wasn't a man who suspected his wife and was just waiting for confirmation. This was a father whose world had collapsed in real time as he realized that the person reporting his son missing might actually be the reason he was missing. And up until that point, Al had been deployed with the National Guard. He trusted Letitia to care for his children. He trusted her narrative, trusted that whatever had happened, she was just trying to help. And that trust evaporated the moment the video was played. And from there, the investigation shifted rather decisively. When law enforcement searched the home more thoroughly than they had before, they didn't find any signs of a runaway. What they found was blood, and not a drop, not a smear from like a scraped knee or some childhood accident. There was blood on the walls, blood on the carpet, blood consistent with a violent assault. And here's where Letitia's story stopped being shaky and started being completely grotesque, because there is no version of reality where a child suffers injuries severe enough to leave that kind of blood evidence, and then calmly runs away to play with his friends. That blood told the investigators something really essential, that whatever had happened to Gannon did not happen outside of the home, it had happened inside, and it had happened while he was under Letitia's care. Now, at this point, most people in Letitia's position would do one of two things: stop talking or lawyer up. Now, Letitia did neither of those things. Instead, she talked even more. She talked to police, to neighbors, to the media, to social media. She gave interviews where she cried, gesturing and presenting herself as the most devastated person in the room. She framed herself as a victim of circumstances, of suspicion, unfair judgment, and every time she spoke, the story changed.
So what I want you to do is take me through Sunday into Monday.
Okay.
and be as detailed as possible as to what you were doing, who was there, where you were at, how long you spent, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. Because the more detail I have, it might spark something for me.
Is it okay if I take my notes out? Because like I wrote down all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I was like, I tried to write down anything he might like say, and just in case, because I had like notes from different things.
He was inside, and I heard something, and so I walked to the storage closet to open the storage closet. And when I do, he was standing in there. He had on gloves.
In the storage closet?
Yes.
Okay.
He had one of the gloves. Okay. And I was terrified. Okay. So terrified. And then he just knocked me down and like towards Gannon's room. And he was like hitting on me. It was like hard, like on the ground.
Okay.
And he was trying to like bite me. And I told her, I said, I have to tell you about it.
Okay.
And like, and I'm sitting there like freaking out, like, okay, what do you want me to do? Blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, he asked me to give him a suitcase, and I gave him a brown suitcase, and then he hit me on the head again, and I like, right here. He just kept like hitting me right there like that.
Okay.
And so then he did that, and then I blacked out again. Okay. I was having a panic attack, and then I don't know what happened from there.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.
You've been a part of the investigation since the very first time. You were the last person to see him. Is that right?
Correct.
What did you see when you last saw him?
Well, I'm not allowed to talk about anything with the case. I would more so be willing to talk about how the community needs to have faith and continue to work together and not make these false accusations, like the things that have been said that I've disappeared from the community. I haven't been there to help, but there's lots of reasons behind that.
Reasons like death threats, right?
Right. Death threats are one of them. My family's getting lots of death threats. We counted over 20-some. Death threats already. Two, my husband's ex-wife is living in our home. And of course, I'm not coming home to do these things and to help with the family when I was kind of like told I couldn't. And then many other things that happened with the El Paso County Police Department, you know, and in doing the investigation, I was told I wasn't compliant.
I should try and clarify here, not necessarily crime rates, but the way that people are reacting online to rumors about you with the search.
Oh, yes. Wow. The rumors have gotten so bad. I pretty much have been told at least 10 different ways that these people have these conspiracy theories. I guess they watch a lot of law shows and maybe they have all these theories on how Gannon is dead. And that's what they're saying. So I'm like, why are you saying Gannon is dead? He is not dead. We are going to find Gannon. And that's the main goal that we all have. My family has. Just because you haven't seen us, we have that same goal. And we've been out searching. My aunt has been out searching. My family has been out searching. We all have been doing that together so that we could protect each other. I'm just ready for Gannon to come home. Most importantly, for him to see his family. But second, I am going to be so ecstatic when I'm able to say to people that I hope they have a really sincere apology for all these theories that have came out online, for all the things they said that I have done or people have done. I just want everyone to know that we're going to find Gannon. And I love him so much. I've helped taking care of him for so long.
Any message for Gannon?
The message for Gannon I have is, Gannon, when you get here, you'll be able to truly tell what happened. And then I really hope I get a sincere apology from everyone who has made all those things, especially from my husband.
Gannon had run away. No, he was abducted. A man had attacked her. Gannon was trafficked. There was a stranger involved. And at one point, she introduced this mysterious attacker named Eduardo, which I cannot stress this enough, is not a detail that appears in any reality-based crimes. That is a detail that appears when somebody is desperately trying to explain evidence that they cannot undo. One of the earliest signs that something was wrong came before Gannon actually was reported missing. So the night before, Letitia had texted Al about this candle being knocked over and damaging the carpet in Gannon's room, and she was worried about the deposit that they weren't going to get back. So she framed it as an accident. It was this inconvenience, a little bit of property damage. What she did not say was that Gannon was hurt. She didn't say that he needed any kind of medical attention, and she didn't say that anything serious had happened. Later, the investigators would determine that by the time those messages were sent, Gannon had already suffered significant injuries, which means that Letitia looked at a badly injured child and decided that this carpet was the problem. And that detail alone tells you exactly who she is.
But it was still in the same time frame that I gave you guys. So that wasn't, there was no contradictory to that same time frame, because it still was about 4 o'clock.
Do you need the restroom or anything like
that? No, I'm actually, am I like free to leave?
We're not holding you here. We'd like to get you over to the hospital for that.
No, I would totally do that, but I really am. I just want to get some food and take a minute, and I can drive myself to the hospital. I don't want to feel like I'm some, you know, person they're going to look at differently because I am showing up with, you know, police and people. And I just,
let me go check on a couple of things really quick, and then, I'll be right back. Okay.
Okay. You said I was free to go.
Are you wanting to leave right now?
I'm really hungry. I'm thirsty. Look at my lips. They're chapped.
Okay. Can you give me just a few minutes to just check to make sure that I've covered everything that I need to cover? And then I'll come back in?
She said that I would be able to go.
And I'm not saying that you can't. I'm asking if you can give me a few minutes. That's all.
I can. Can you just call me? Or, I mean...
Okay. All right. I'll be right back.
Okay. So can you tell me how to leave? Please?
I have to go over here. Let me get somebody to escort you out.
Okay.
As search efforts expanded, volunteers, law enforcement, canine units, the tone was shifting because I don't think this was a runaway. This wasn't a misunderstanding, and it wasn't like just a kid that was late coming home. This was an endangered child case, and Letitia knew it, which is why her behavior became increasingly erratic. So she inserted herself into the narrative constantly. She was correcting the investigators unnecessarily and reacted defensively to routine questions. Now, people who are innocent usually want clarity. People who are lying, they want control.
The police came. He was in the house.
Where was he at in the house?
I didn't know at the time. I thought they were going to find him because the guy was like, can we please search the house? And I said, sure.
Okay.
Terrified, which is why I sent Lena and Harley to Dollar Store and all these places.
Okay. All right. Well, that's huge. That's huge, because now we can look at different camera time frames and all that, and we can look at different angles.
I'll give you his name. I swear to you.
Give me his
when
name.
I tell you this part, this is why I want immunity.
Okay.
This dude, he followed me. The guy followed to Petco, and as I was pulling off the road to Palmer Lake area, somebody was laying down in the road when I turned around and came back the other way, and this dude gets in the truck with us. I didn't have anything, knives, anything to anybody off or anything. I had to go like a normal time. Anna was crying in the back seat till we threw up. He was so scared. He was with us all the way back to the house. We get there, he's still in your car at this time. We all get out. The guy was with us the whole time.
Okay.
The whole entire time. I asked him, what did he want? He could take everything he wanted. He could rob us. He could do whatever he fucking wanted. Have it all. There was a struggle. Everything back and forth. Terrified to say anything because he had the gun. It was just terrifying. All I could hear was Gannon screaming. I didn't know what was going on. I don't know how bad he hurt Gannon. I don't know. There's no accident where I hurt, and there's nothing like that.
So they started tracking Letitia's movements, her phone data, her vehicle, her timelines, and they noticed some gaps, like really long ones, periods that she just couldn't really explain, and trips that didn't make sense. And of course, her story that completely shifted every time she was challenged on it. And all of it pointed back to one truth. The only consistent thing about Letitia's account was that it never matched the evidence. By the end of January 2020, the runaway narrative was completely dead. The abduction story was crumbling, and that intruder theory was completely laughable. And the blood in Gannon's bedroom had rewritten the case entirely. This was no longer a search for a missing child. It was the early stages of a homicide investigation, and one where the person that was doing the most talking was also the person that the evidence was starting to circle. Now, by the time the investigators started pulling apart the affidavit, they weren't asking if Gannon had been seriously harmed. They were asking how long he'd been suffering and how much effort went into pretending that he wasn't. Because the truth is that what happened to Gannon didn't occur in a single moment of any kind of rage. It unfolded over hours, possibly longer, and it involved decisions made again and again by the one adult who was supposed to protect him. According to the arrest affidavit, Gannon suffered multiple stab wounds, blunt force trauma, and defensive injuries. And that last part matters because defensive injuries mean one thing, that Gannon had tried to protect himself. So this wasn't a child that was struck once and then rendered unconscious. This was a child who was aware enough to raise his arms, to move, to react, and to fight in the only way that an 11-year-old can fight an adult who's attacking him. And yet at no point did Letitia call 911, and at no point did she seek any medical help, and no point did she do the one thing that every parent does instinctively when a child is seriously hurt: ask for help immediately. Instead, she texted about a candle and a stupid carpet. Investigators didn't need Letitia's version of events to understand what had happened inside Gannon's bedroom. Blood evidence told them plenty. There was blood on the carpet, on the walls, on the surfaces that indicated movement after the injury, not a single location consistent with an accidental fall or a one-time injury. This was a prolonged assault. And importantly, it didn't end right away. The affidavit states that Gannon's blood was found in multiple areas of the house, suggesting that he was injured in one place and then moved while he was still alive. Which is a sentence no parent should ever have to hear, and no child should ever have to endure. At some point after the initial assault, Letitia faced a problem. Gannon wasn't dead. He was badly injured, catastrophically, but he was still alive. This is where the narrative shifts from abuse to intentional homicide, because choices followed that. And the affidavit describes further injuries that are consistent with additional stabbing and blunt force injuries that would have required deliberate effort. So this wasn't someone who was panicking and just trying to help him. This was someone that was escalating, because helping Gannon would have meant consequences. And Letitia does not do consequences. After Gannon was fatally injured, the focus turned outward, not towards grief, shock, or horror, but towards containment. She attempted to clean blood from the room, and not well, not thoroughly, but deliberately trying to do that, which again tells us something really important, that she was not disassociating, she wasn't confused, and she wasn't spiraling uncontrollably. She was problem solving. And badly, but intentionally. When investigators compared Letitia's statements with digital evidence, things unraveled pretty quickly, because her phone data, her vehicle movements, and that surveillance footage and some receipts had painted a picture that bore no resemblance to her spoken narrative, or narratives, I should say. She claimed Gannon had walked out of the door, and data showed that he never did that. She claimed that she searched frantically and data showed controlled specific movements, including trips that made sense only if she was moving something, not looking for someone. And remember, this is all happening while she's speaking publicly about trafficking rings, mysterious attackers, and imaginary accomplices, none of which explained the blood in Gannon's room. Shortly after reporting Gannon missing, Letitia rented a vehicle. And again, is not something that I think people do when they believe a child might come home. Investigators later tracked her movements across state lines, including a trip to Florida, during which the affidavit alleges that Gannon's body was transported. And if you're wondering how anyone thought this wouldn't be discovered, you're probably not alone, because this wasn't subtle of her. This wasn't clever on anything. It was selfish and it was sloppy. Every new piece of evidence required a new story. So Letitia provided them, and a lot of them. Like, she's claiming she was attacked, Gannon was abducted, he met some stranger, she was the victim, she feared for her life, and at no point did she ever say, I hurt him, he needed help, or I failed him. Which is why her lies grew increasingly elaborate, because simple lies don't survive forensic scrutiny. By the time law enforcement executed search warrants and examined the full scope of all of the evidence, this case was no longer about whether Letitia was lying or not. It was about how long she had been lying for. Because the affidavit makes something painfully clear, that Gannon's injuries did not happen all at once, and they did not happen accidentally, and they did not happen without time to stop those decisions that were being made. Someone had multiple opportunities to choose differently, and they did not.
There's nothing that happened in any house that would have hurt, harmed, murdered, done anything to anyone.
Because everything that I've looked at in this case, when you see the blood spatter on the wall, you see a big pool in the corner.
Okay.
You see your shoes that we've collected mm-hmm. with Gannon's blood on okay. the bottom of them.
Okay.
And then you point to Eduardo, who doesn't exist, yeah. or maybe he did exist, and we don't have a last name.
Mm-hmm.
Then you point to Quincy Brown, and then you say Uncle Matt, these names and stuff, and it's like,
why even say anything? Because everything I say, you're going to tell me that, oh, blah, 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 because you want it just like everyone else want it to be me. So that way, yeah,
I don't care
that way, y'all can just go ahead and be the hero and all these things.
I do not get paid one extra dime if it's you.
By the time Letitia was formally charged with first-degree murder, child abuse resulting in death, tampering with a deceased body, and a handful of related offenses, the case against her was obviously no longer circumstantial. It was pretty overwhelming because they had blood evidence, they had the digital tracking, they had surveillance footage, and her own words, and many of them that were contradicting themselves over and over again. And yet somehow she still believed that she was the smartest person in the room. That belief would not age particularly well. So Letitia was arrested on March 2nd, 2020 in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, after weeks of investigators patiently letting her talk herself deeper and deeper into a hole. And it is worth noting that this was not a dramatic takedown. There was no car chase, no resistance. It was just kind of the quiet end of a lie that had already collapsed under its own weight. And by then, Gannon's remains had been found. And they were found inside a suitcase under a bridge in Pensacola, Florida. And this is a detail that still turns my stomach, because nothing says I loved him quite like transporting a child's body across state lines and then leaving him like discarded luggage. Once Letitia was extradited back to Colorado, the tone shifted a little bit. Gone was the sobbing stepmother, the frantic searcher, and the victim narrative. Enter Letitia, the misunderstood genius with multiple personalities. Because she now claimed she had dissociative identity disorder, memory loss, alternate personalities who had done this, confusion about reality, and at one point she suggested that she didn't even remember killing Gannon, which was interesting considering that she remembered inventing these traffickers, naming these imaginary assailants, cleaning up blood, moving the body, renting vehicles, and crossing state lines. Selective amnesia is a pretty bold strategy. So the court ordered extensive psychiatric evaluations, not because they believed her, but because due process matters. So there were multiple health experts that examined her, and every single one of them reached the same conclusion. Letitia Stotch was not insane. She was malingering, which in plain language means she was a faker pants. So the trial began in March of 2023, and from day one, Letitia treated it like a stage. She rolled her eyes, she smirked, she whispered to herself, she reacted theatrically to some testimony, and at times she appeared to believe that she was like auditioning for some kind of sympathy thing. The jury was unmoved. While she performed, the evidence was speaking pretty clearly because the jurors heard about Gannon's injuries in detail, the blood patterns inside his room, the movement of his body, the timeline, those inconsistencies, and the lies that were just layered on top of lies. And then they heard from experts who explained patiently and very clinically why this was not this sudden snap. It was not an accident and not any kind of act of disassociating in her mind. It was deliberate. In a move that surprised absolutely no one, Letitia chose to testify, and it went about as well as you would expect. She contradicted herself. She blamed other people. She shifted the responsibility around. She denied basic facts that had already been established by evidence. And at one point, she suggested that she had been attacked again and that Gannon's injuries somehow resulted from forces that were completely outside of her control. Well, the prosecution didn't have to get loud about it. They didn't mock her. They didn't need to do that. They simply walked her back through her own statements, one by one. And with every single answer, the gap between reality and her version widened until it became pretty impossible to ignore. After weeks of testimony, the jury deliberated for less than 4 hours. That's not a close call. They returned guilty verdicts on first-degree murder, child abuse resulting in death, tampering with a deceased body, and false reporting. There was no hesitation in their verdict at all. There's no compromise about it, no giving her the benefit of the doubt. The jury did not believe her. They believed the evidence. So Letitia was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, plus additional consecutive sentences for the other charges. So life. There's not going to be any parole hearings, no redemption arc in her story, and no future where she gets to rewrite this story. The judge was pretty blunt with her, and he described her actions as cruel, calculated, and devoid of any kind of remorse.
Is getting a phone call, letting them know that something has happened to their child. How much worse must that nightmare be when law enforcement asks not for a picture of your loved one, but rather DNA and dental records? When you take a life, regardless of how you do that, you forever alter the future. Neither Mr. Stout nor Ms. Bullard will ever see their son graduate from high school, go through the joy and the pain of that first love, or get married. They will never know what kind of impact their son may have had on the world if only he had lived to become an adult. I can't imagine the terror and confusion that he must have felt in the last moments of his life when he knew his life was being taken by someone he trusted to protect it. I understand the claim of dissociative identity disorder. I have seen something resembling that, and I have seen defendants with schizophrenic disorders. I can understand those. What I have seen is that the mental condition causes the person to act a certain way, and when they realize what they did, they are astonished by what happened, or they have no memory of what happened. Your claim is that it was another personality that murdered Gannon, but there is no time during the minutes, hours, and days following the murder where Letitia came out and wondered, gee, why am I carrying a body around in my luggage? That just isn't credible. I can, however, say without hesitation that the facts in this case are the most horrific I have ever seen. Your conduct in this case deserves the maximum punishment that I can impose under Colorado law.
When victim impact statements had been read, the focus shifted finally back to where it always really should have been, and that was on Gannon. Father spoke about the boy who had trusted the adults around him. His mother spoke about the child that she loved fiercely. And his whole family spoke about birthdays missed, futures that were erased, and a kindness that never got the chance to grow up. And Letitia sat and listened to all of it. And if she felt anything about it, she didn't show it. So here's the part that matters, I think, the most. Gannon did not die because he was a difficult child, and he didn't die because he was emotional or had anxiety. He didn't die because he had made any kind of mistake about the candle or anything. He died because an adult with full responsibility for his safety chose violence and lies and herself over and over again. And no amount of invented personalities, fake attackers, or courtroom theatrics is going to change that. It was a story of a child trapped with somebody who resented him and who believed consequences were something that other people dealt with. Gannon deserved patience, he deserved care, and to grow up. And the fact that he didn't will always matter more than whatever Letitia says about herself. That was the horrible murder of Gannon Stotch. And I'm going to be back again next week with another terrible, awful case. In the meantime, you know what to do with all your stuff. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
This episode sponsored by IP Vanish. IP Vanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IP Vanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IP Vanish. This episode sponsored by IP Vanish. IP Vanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IP Vanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IP Vanish.